أغنن ربي على البركة، أغنن ربي على النغمة، أركض لربي مع الرجل بخفة كالغزال، ونركض كلناها بالنظمة طلع مطلع. أغنن ربي على البركة، أغنن ربي على النغمة. ها
stories on PRN.FM. What a weekend, what a weekend we have had. By the way, we started the program today with a very special musical treat that is one of my favorites by the group Yemen Blues. It's appropriate today because we have the move by President Trump against seven Muslim-majority nations. That singer and composer, by the way, Ravid Kahalani. I always say Kahalani, but Ravid Kahalani and his band, Yemen Blues with Baraka. It's from his 2011 album, Yemen Blues by Ravid Kahalani. Well, what a week and what a weekend. President Donald Trump flamed out, lit a big fire at the end of his first week in office with controversial executive orders, and the most recent one, which was the one that got things started over the weekend, that fired up protests across the country over the weekend, and mostly at airports and city centers that are now in their third day. On Friday, you may recall, President Trump signed an order barring people from seven Muslim-majority countries, including Iraq, Syria, Sudan, Iran, Somalia, Libya, and Yemen, from entering the United States for at least the next 90 days. All refugees, especially from war-torn countries, will be denied U.S. entry for 4 months. Trump called the measures long overdue and said that his order was part of a fuller plan to develop, quote, extreme vetting, unquote, procedures to qualify people coming in from the targeted countries. This, he said, will shield the United States against potential acts of terrorism. But he insists it's not an order aimed at Muslims. Well, we're going to take a look at that today. But first, I want to share with you some words that were said over the week by people who are in the business of shaping public opinion. And I just want to check that we're ready, are we, with two clips. One is from, we're going to hear first from, I'm a little disjointed here, but I'm getting back getting into my groove, as they say. We will hear from Farah Pandit, who is a senior fellow on the Council of Foreign Relations. Well, let's start with Donald Trump first, and then I'll take you into some other clips that frame this discussion for us today.
It's not a Muslim ban, but we were totally prepared. It's working out very nicely. You see it at the airports. You see it all over. It's working out very nicely. And we're going to have a very, very strict ban. And we're going to have extreme vetting, which we should have had in this country for many years. Thank you, everybody.
Well, how about that? It's working out really, really nicely. This ban is working out very nicely, very smoothly. It should have been done a while ago. And according to the president, the thousands and thousands of people who gathered in protest all over the country and at the and major airports also across the country, that's a figment of somebody's imagination. There's doubt even if that actually happened. These protests didn't happen. It was just a figment of somebody's imagination that they haven't. But, you know, it's not just from, quote, liberals, unquote, that the pressure has begun to grow. We see also from, of course, the Muslim community. We see all kinds of advocacy groups coming together. We see also, this is very significant, we are seeing even Republicans, yes, from Trump's own party, very, very concerned about the way this is being done and being handled. They differ markedly with him on it, and they are speaking out. Even the Koch brothers at their retreat over the weekend, this was a topic of discussion, and they are very, very disturbed by Trump's action. Let's listen here to two views. These are conservative women within the Republican Party. And the first we will hear from is Farah Pandit, who is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, who had been an advisor to both President George Bush and President Barack Obama. In the capacity of her position, she's an official, was an official at the State Department. And then we will hear from Anna Navarro. If you watch CNN regularly, you will see, you would notice that her name is associated with political commentary that she does for CNN. It's very interesting to hear what their positions are, and it is a sentiment, especially among Republicans, a sentiment that is growing. And the Trump administration is now trying to reel back on this decision that was quite surreptitious and sudden, and immediately provoking all these various sectors into responding in similar fashion. So let's listen to what they had to say this weekend.
All agree that we must keep America safe, and we want President Trump to be successful in defeating ISIS and related organizations. But the executive order has a premise of 9/11, and by that rationale, it doesn't make any sense. The strategy is flawed, and it doesn't have any intellectual rigor. We have to get to the actual meat of the issue, which is ideas matter. Their ideas have no borders, and you can't build idea wall. You can't ban all the countries in the world in which the bad ideas are sprouting. So when you look at what is actually taking place and we think about what this is going to do, it really takes away from the goal that he has set out for himself. It doesn't have the rationale that we need it to. And it is very important to understand that both in the Bush administration and in the Obama administration, we understood that the power to stop recruitment came from civil society. You can't set up an us versus them. We need to have have Muslims around the world working with us to stop recruitment. And the way to do that is to engage them. If you don't have trust with the government, you can't engage them, you can't galvanize the movement that we need. And I'm afraid what has happened here is that it has stoked the idea of an us and them. It has given power to the extremists, and it will not get us where we need to go. I think the measure of success and seriousness of the Trump doctrine on terrorism really will be how serious they are with regard to Saudi Arabia, where these ideas have actually been sprouting for decades. So as we think through what they're doing and why they're doing it, the rationale doesn't make sense. It is flawed, and we have to really be thinking about the long-term impact. Our actions make a difference, our words make a difference, and the bottom line is we need to have partners that can work with us to stop recruitment.
You know, I think people are exhausted. I think a lot of Republicans are exhausted. The flurry of activity this week has been really a dizzying pace. It's so hard to keep up. And so many of them have been speaking out consistently this week against the charge that there were 3 million illegal voters, against the tariffs against Mexico, against the idea of the wall, against not investigating Russia for hacking. So I think it's such a, you know, steady rain of things that they have to confront Trump on, that it's been an emotionally exhausting week. I have friends telling me, I disagree with this. It is an un-American executive order, but I can't survive politically if I am confronting the man every day. But this is one where, as exhausted as they may be, Republicans need to appeal to their sense of consciousness, to their principles, to what is right and wrong, to American values, and they need to speak up. The Republican Party I grew up in is a Republican Party of family unity. What we saw yesterday were families being torn apart. What we saw yesterday was violations of the Constitution. We don't treat different people different ways. We don't impose a religious test. And though folks may want to tell us this is not a Muslim ban, I'll tell you who thinks it's a Muslim ban. Muslims think it's a Muslim ban. Those who want a Muslim ban, like little boy Flynn and David Duke, the former KKK leader, are celebrating it as a Muslim ban. And those of us who don't want a Muslim ban see it as such.
Governor?
Well, there we are. So despite the fact that Donald Trump insists that this is not a ban of Muslims, just about everybody sees it that way, including people from his ideological neck of the woods, or political neck of the woods. I don't know what his ideology is. They see it as a Muslim ban. So what could it be? Do the figures support that these specific countries are what the United States needs to be worried about in terms of terrorism? These specific countries, these Muslim majority specific countries, that's where terrorism is. But they're not from any of the countries, it was noted in an article I read over the weekend. They do not include any of the countries in which Donald Trump has businesses. None of these seven countries identified by Donald Trump as the worrisome countries, none of those countries has a Trump business in it, not a Trump hotel or any Trump-related business. And yet, the ones that he exempted, he has businesses there. So is there a coincidence? Is there a coincidence here? I think there is a justified concern, especially in these times. You can't blame a head of state anywhere, especially if they are likely to be, the countries are likely to be targets of terrorism. There is a legitimate concern about terrorism. But this does not come through to the public as a concern so much about terrorism, but as a way of, I talked some time ago about the politics of vengeance. You punish people who really have no significant association with terrorism on the United States. You punish them because you have nothing to lose. You don't single out Saudi Arabia, for example. You don't single out any country from which the terrorists actually come and the country that actually funds terrorism. You stick to countries that are basically not able to fight back, not able to call into question your motivation, and the singling out of these countries for no reason other than it is politically expedient to do so. And you can gain a lot of mileage by just letting them have it, excoriating them, holding them responsible for terrorism, and it certainly doesn't hold up. Factually, it does not hold up at all. It was noted in an article I read that, well, it reminded the reader that of the 9/11 hijackers, the majority of them, all but two, came from Saudi Arabia. It's not on Trump's list. But here's a glimmer of hope. I think what we're seeing here is an indication. It's small, but it's very, very significant. An indication that Trump's erratic behavior, it just spontaneous. His erratic behavior is beginning to concern them. Remember, I talked about the fact that people are not considering one major important thing about Donald Trump, and that is the possibility that there's something wrong with him, psychologically and emotionally, perhaps even spiritually. He is not well-centered. And somebody needs to take him someplace and get to the bottom of it and get him treatment. And if not, in any event, that's what we ought to do. We ought to re-examine how we react to this. And taking on the responsibility for his actions. No, these belong to him. But we're seeing indications within the Democratic the Republican establishment, that something here is just not right with the way he's doing things. And of course, we know why he's doing the things that he's doing. For one thing, there isn't a Congress really in session to jam him up in any way. He has free rein. And that's why every day there's a flurry of executive orders. Orders coming down like a stream. So he has the benefit of having no real impediment, no organized impediment to whatever it is he wants to do in Congress at this time, because they haven't really assembled for the new term. Number two is, he is feeding into the groundswell of support, the sector that did support him. He's feeding into that to say, I'm being loyal to you. I need you to recognize that, because he knows a fight is coming. And in the same way that the public has so far, in many ways, reacted en masse to some of the insane executive orders that he has issued, and mostly favoring the Democratic position on it, He needs to keep his constituency close. And so he is issuing these executive orders to remind them that pretty soon he will need to have them mobilized when the fight truly begins. He's naming, for example, a Supreme Court justice tomorrow evening. It probably is set for that time so that he gets through a day without rancorous opposition. At least he wouldn't have to deal with that for a full day. Not until Wednesday would he have to deal with that. He will then be able, again, he's doing all these things to shore up his claim that he is being very, very loyal to his supporters, to his base. He's fulfilling literally his word that he made during his campaign. And he is going to have a fight. He is going to have a fight, whether from the people or from Congress. He's going to have a fight, and he will need them to be in place to protect him. So these executive orders are being timed that way. The release of these orders are being timed. But the strategy behind them is, of course, to maintain a close tie with his constituency while he changes the landscape completely to suit him. The Democrats, as you can see, have been neutralized already. They are in full reactive mode. They have not yet sent any signals that they are proactive or that they're even organized for a fight. So he's doing all these things to make points and to get away with them without having any legislative opposition. They can't fight him on his executive orders that much because he's operating under just that, executive law. He can do these things, or at least many of these things. And even if there's opposition, it is not likely to derail what he has already done, the orders he has already issued. The fight essentially will be budgetary because all these things that he's doing is going to cost a lot of money, which has to come from someplace. And that is where probably the Democratic Party is hoping to have some kind of leverage against him. Or in some way to take the edge off or to completely stall these orders that he has issued. We don't know. But what we do know is that right now, Trump is calling all of the shots. He's got a lot of cards, a lot of Trump cards, pardon the pun. But look at where this leaves us as the people. It was a remarkable thing to see that many people mobilized at the airports and in several cities across the country so quickly and in such great significant numbers. And for a specific reason, that was really what was so heartening, that they confronted Trump's racism. Absolutely clear, unarguable racism. The fact that he singled out Muslims, the fact that he singled out these particular countries that don't really have much of a way of facing him down and that must lean on other sympathetic countries and people who understand what the situation is. Many of these countries are actually war-torn right now. Syria, Somalia, places that Trump doesn't want anybody coming in because whoever is coming from there is likely to be a terrorist. It is such simplistic analysis. But, you know, our government very often is devoted to being simplistic in its policies, domestic and foreign. But the fact that people are standing up and standing up for this particular cause and showing leadership over the people who are supposed to take this on as part of their duties as elected officials, so that the officials, the leadership, the elected leadership is actually following the lead of the people in this fight. It is very important to pay attention to this. And we see even a crumbling within the Republican Party establishment. They are embarrassed by the president. You just heard two examples, and there are many more speaking up over the weekend on all of these talk shows. They were very clear to distance themselves from what they see as a rogue Republican president. They're not so brave as to break with the party over him, but the mere fact that they are speaking out, the mere fact that they are affronted, maybe because it's so in your face you can't avoid it. Maybe if he had done this same thing more subtly, the way Barack Obama did his moves, very subtly, but still is the king of deportations. Maybe they would have, you know, been able to bear it. But the mere fact that they are coming out and saying these things is an indication that Trump has not steamrolled everybody. And different sectors are finding ways to kind of come together to find common ground in opposition to him. This is a very hopeful sign. So let's take a look from your point of view. We'll take this break. And what are your reactions to this? You know, the reason we pay attention to these kinds of things is that you know it's only a matter of time before it grows legs in terms of Trump and the sector of society that he is in place to serve. He has an agenda that he must carry out. And in the way you could look at these things as test runs for the real deal. It's real enough as it is, I grant you. But it is not as real as it's immediately going to get. So these are trial balloons to get people agitated, to get them all flustered. You heard Anna Navarro say how draining. It's only 1 week. That's a tactic. You weaken people. You just get them fed up. You get them numb. And this is how you immobilize them. This is how you vanquish them. But there are people, she admits, even in her circle, and she's a very, very committed Republican. She's saying, I've talked to my friends and retired. With all of these executive orders, and you're running from pillar to post to figure out how to react. But the immediate situation is a setup for the eventual plan. which would be enacted based on how people are reacting to the first salvos. We'll take a break and come to your thoughts about this very crazy weekend we have just had at 888-874-4888 right after this short break. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're talking about this crazy weekend, which began on Friday, of President Donald Trump issuing yet another one of his masterful executive orders, banning people from seven specific countries from entering the United States. And these are all majority Muslim countries, including Somalia, Syria, Iraq, Iran, and I lost my count of which ones. I'm getting a little... My computer isn't as fast as it ought to be, which is very odd. But he has barred from Syria, Iraq, Sudan, Iran, Somalia, Libya, and Yemen. He has barred them from entering the country for a specific period of time, ranging from between 90 days and 120 days until further notice. And this is being done, he said, to facilitate a more extreme vetting of citizens of that country trying to come to the United States. And it's also to reduce, because if the vetting is done, it will reduce terrorism occurring in the United States. But we do not have evidence that we have had this much terrorism from any of these countries. Actually, zero. Zero terrorism or terrorist attacks from people from these countries in the United States. So there's got to be a different reason for why these countries are being singled out. Some have theorized that, and it is important to note that these countries, none of them, in none of these countries, is Donald Trump operating a hotel or any related business. The countries that should, if he wanted to, be specific about it and equal about it, some of the countries that should be on the list are not, but in those countries, he has several businesses. So is that coincidental or is it just, you know, just luck of the draw? I don't think it's coincidental at all. But beyond that, he was very careful to communicate that he said it, as a matter of fact, and then denied it, that these were from Muslim countries. So the executive order was to apply to Muslims. At one point during his campaign, he had made it very plain that he wanted no Muslims from that region of the world in the United States to come into the United States to migrate to the United States, because that's where all the terrorism is bred, born and bred in these countries. And he therefore wanted no people from those countries in the United States. Now he's saying it is not a Muslim ban at all. It is merely a proactive measure that he's taking to reduce the possibility of terrorist acts being committed in the United States, possibly by people living there in these seven countries, or people who migrated to those countries and then intend to come to the United States. Either way, it's a very messy situation, rife with discrimination, racial discrimination, religious discrimination, and a not so subtle hint about the white nationalist agenda, which Trump is clearly a proponent of. I just even now, as you think about it, you see the long-term implications, and it's not going to be too much long-term. It's coming. You see that the agenda here is to re-whiten America. It's not white enough. And in whatever ways that the president can use to encourage popular support for offensive policies, he's not beneath doing that at all. This is one example. On the other hand, we're noticing that there was swift and vigorous and very loud reaction by just plain people who descended at the airports and welcomed the refugees, welcomed the citizens of other countries coming into the United States who had been detained at the airport. We see really strong citizen reaction, which is very hopeful. We see that the citizen action and reaction basically forced the leadership of Congress, especially the Democratic leadership of Congress, to understand that that's their role. Their role is to give political protection to people who are in this horrible mess, caught in it because Donald Trump is in his executive order writing mode with the absence of a fully convened Congress. So he's got a little bit of time to get these ridiculous measures through and to face absolutely no real opposition. So this was remarkable and very hopeful. Hello, Maat, you're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me now? Okay,
yes.
Hotep. Yes, Hotep, beloved family. Yes, absolutely. But I am totally hardened by the response of my brothers and sisters, and I have to call them that no matter what the nationality. People, maybe Henry knows about Chicago because there was a brother, hard to say whether he was Latino or Black or Middle Eastern, which I find very interesting, but he just set it out. So I'm sure it's on YouTube. You need to see how he broke it down, saying that with the rhetoric of anti-Latino, anti-immigrant, anti-Black, anti-poor, that of course the vicious policies coming down would try to be put in place. So CNN played a clip of it, and it was just so wonderful to see. I'm just so proud of these younger people. But Utrice, also we need to pay attention to the ditties and the chants, the banners. I mean, I put my TV on pause to actually read the banners because they are awesome. And in particular, many had no wall. And why? Now, I want to make a couple points on the wall, and then I have another major point.
You have to kind of condense it. We have a long list. The thing is that there is a connection, and people are doing that too. They're making the connection. There is a connection between the wall that Trump is allegedly going to build to separate Mexico from the United States, and there is a connection between that and this ban of people from seven nations. It is that we don't want you here. You don't belong here. So we're doing everything possible to keep you out.
And you, Trish, none of it is rational because I heard of all people, George Will, on NPR's, they're doing an indivisible nightly show where people get to call in and they express their concerns around Trump, and they had a conservative host, and George Will said that most of the people who come in and become, I'll say undocumented versus illegal immigrants is they come into JFK and O'Hare and they overstay their visas. He also, and I heard other people too, talk about the fact that there's a net loss. Probably Mexicans don't want to be in this xenophobic environment in the last 2 years, that are more people going back than are coming in. So the wall, and CNN had a piece on the tunnels where incredible ingenuity is brought to fore 70 feet under the ground. Also, lastly, look at the Cato Institute, where they actually say that 750,000 refugees, zero terrorist connections, and they even give the statistics as to your likelihood, I think in terms of being affecting the terrorist strike by a refugee, it's like a billion plus something to one. And I'll listen to the other brothers and sisters. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for getting us started today. Michelle from California, what are your thoughts?
Hey, Eugene. Hi. Yep. The situation is extremely complicated. It's like, oh, my God. Finally, the media is doing their job at exposing a president, okay? And I'm looking at the old, I mean, I'm very sad to see all these people, Muslim, going through so much at the airport. And to me, there's no reason for him, Trump, to do such thing. But there's a bigger picture, you know? And the bigger picture is, we never had a threat of terrorism in this country. All this terrorism that has been going on in San Bernardino and Paris, they're all inside jobs. You know, no terrorist was part of these attacks. And the media is just an agent of propaganda for government crimes. To me, Trump has his issues, but so far he has done a lot.
But we still do have to consider 9/11. We've had some terrorist attacks on U.S. soil, but you're correct, they were not by U.S. nationals. They were acts of terrorism going all the way back. But, of course, people would not associate, for example, the Ku Klux Klan, the white nationalist groups that slaughtered all these people, or even the government itself. The United States actually bombed an entire black town. The first aerial bombing by the government on blacks. So we have acts of terrorism. These are not going to be considered acts of terrorism.
It was not an act of terrorism. 9/11 was not, Richard. I disagree with you. There are too many documentaries out there that show that it was a planned act. It was not an act of terrorism. Okay? Anyway, to go back to Trump, you know, he already erased the TPP, which will destroy our society. And he already started having better relations with world leaders. If Hillary Clinton was president, we would already have a war, probably with Russia or Iran. And Trump supports the Brexit, okay? And he's already appointed JFK, Robert Kennedy Jr., as a head to investigate about the vaccination of children. And he already agreed that schools should not ask parents about if their child has been vaccinated or not. And, you know, I never vaccinate my children, but I find ways not to do it. But so many parents have to deal with autism. And I'm pretty sure.
But keep on topic. Keep on topic. We're talking about the president's action on Friday, and what does it mean? How do you interpret it?
Well, I think Kellyanne Conway said something. She said that they have information that the public do not have. I give them the benefit of the doubt. But my only concern is the fact that Trump excluded all the countries that he's doing business with from the ban. That, to me, is alarming. And but at the same time, maybe there is a bigger reason why he has that temporary ban. I am waiting to see. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, and I'm not condemning them already quickly based on the motion. But one thing we have to look at is, you know, nobody ever supported these Muslim people, never. And suddenly, every politician like Chuck Schumer was doing his fake crying today, and they're taking advantage of these poor Muslim people. But I don't agree with it. I don't agree what Trump is doing at all. I think it's really bad. His approach, whoever is advising him. But let's take away from Trump being crazy or whatever the mental problem he has. He has a staff. He has a staff of smart people around him that's advising him. They probably weigh on it before they implementing, you know, that rule of banning all these Muslims. We just have to wait and see. And in 1 or 2 weeks to see what's coming out of it. I'm sure the pressure is going to happen.
We'll move along because we have a lot of people. But thanks so much for participating and contributing today. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Treece, how's it going?
Okay.
All right. Greetings to you and the PRN listeners. You know what? I'm still kind of flustered on, you know, why... You know, this, you know, Trump had signed this. Now, we're seeing the results of it. But the one thing that I do know that this is affecting more than just Muslims. And it is basically affecting a lot of travelers. So, you know, when I look at it, because I had some friends who came in from Australia just a couple of days ago, and they said that it took them hours just to get, you know, to get back to Chicago. So, you know, I'm trying to wrap my finger around it. You know, maybe some things, more things would be revealed. But then also, too, this is the action of a guy who has never held a political office, and also a guy who basically just is, you know, kind of reactionary to, you know, to sign something like this and not think about the repercussions of, you know, of what's going to happen. So hopefully this will be a lesson to people to not elect somebody who's never held a public office before as the president of the United States. So, just very immature move, and, you know, basically listening to the people around him and just, like I said, being very reactionary to it. So, I haven't figured it out. So I'll, you know, that's all I have to say about that.
Well, we will have a lot of time to talk about it because, you know, it's going to continue. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Yatrice, and greetings to your audience. You know, I just had a couple of questions in my mind that I haven't quite settled yet, but in Detroit, at the Detroit Metro Airport, there was a huge crowd of folks out there. I watched it on the TV, you know, online there. And one protester mentioned something about the permit that they had. The permit, the protest didn't permit something. And I was wondering, how in the world did they get a permit to protest that quick? And this idea of having a permit to protest, what is that about, too? And the other thing I saw was on Facebook, one gentleman made a comment about, and like you mentioned earlier, how Barack Obama had some of these things in place anyway, these prohibitions against terrorists, so-called, there's this terrorist acts, terrorists, something in 2015, December 19th or something. It was signed, where it modified entry into this country. But one guy made an interesting comment on Facebook suggesting that when Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State, that under her leadership, whatever, a lot of permits or visas were granted in exchange for donations to the Clinton Foundation. Now,
yeah, but
I don't
that,
have any...
does, that would not include the majority of people who are affected as of Friday.
Oh. I don't know.
No, no, they don't. They don't take $10 donations and $20 donations. The people who get favors or who got favors from Hillary Clinton are people who forked over millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Then they operate at a whole different level. This is
right.
meant to impact regular, ordinary citizens, professionals, working people, and people who are just trying to get to a new life. So it's not just that you give a donation, but as we can see, the question now becomes, did Trump, in supposedly issuing an executive order that's supposed to affect everybody, how come he did not include those countries in which he has businesses?
Okay. I don't know the answer. I'm still listening and learning.
We don't know the answer, but we certainly, I'm following you by asking the questions. Thanks
okay.
for calling.
Sure thing.
Rachel,
right.
mm-hmm. Rachel from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I think that...
Are you speaking on speakerphone?
Yes. Yes.
It rebounds, the sound goes crazy.
Got a lot of people on the street right now. I don't think that really, it has significance, but it doesn't bother the status quo out there. It doesn't bother Trump. It doesn't bother the people of real power in this country because it was Theodore Roosevelt that told us how to do it. Theodore Roosevelt said that, I know what you want me to do, but you're going to have to make me do it. And they got out there then, and they presented themselves as such a mass of people that Theodore Roosevelt was protected from any assassination or anything of that nature. And when Obama got into office, he said the same thing. He said, you're going to have to make me do it. But instead of people going out there and making him do it, they went home. And so Obama wound up doing the bidding of the people around him. It was Eisenhower that warned of the cabal that that really runs things, and he was warning Kennedy, and Kennedy found out about it a little too late because we were all naive in the 60s. We were all very naive and. You were very trusting. We had ethics. We had integrity, and we didn't have lobbyists buying off the Senate. We had that's why the people that assassinated Kennedy had to come from the hawks who wanted him dead, and also it had to come from other countries.
But let's stay on point. I disagree with you. About Obama. And frankly, Obama should be excoriated for taking a position, make me do it. Look, who put him in the White House to begin with? The fact is, he owed a great deal to the people who put him in office. Not once, but twice. He did not deliver. He was an absolute abysmal president. In this regard. So I don't accept specifically from Barack Obama any contention at all as legitimate that, you know, okay, you elected me. Well, that's a miracle already. And now on top of that, people have to compel you to do what you should know automatically you should do, that it is your duty to do. I disagree with that, and I condemn him for taking that attitude if, in fact, he actually said those words. because, and this is an ongoing problem that we have, especially with Barack Obama. He completely, almost completely, abandoned his political base, and they were very faithful to him and the Democratic Party. I mean, they were getting ready to elect the most reprehensible candidate we've seen, in some cases even worse than Donald Trump, and that's Hillary Clinton. They were getting ready to do that. Because, and who went campaigning for Hillary Clinton? Barack Obama. So he's got a lot to account for in terms of the sins he has committed against his own constituency, his own political base. Thanks so much for calling and contributing today. We have, let me see, David from New York.
Thank you very much for being on the air, and good fortune to all our listeners. I'm going to try to stay on topic, and here is my opinion about this. Donald Trump made the decision, and the decision to do what he did in the last couple of days about the barring of immigrants from certain places, I don't think has to be a number one priority for public safety. I don't think he did it just for public safety. He did it because he was interested and re-energizing his base. And this was like wonderful music to their ears, and it did a lot in terms of energizing or re-energizing his base, as well as the bureaucracy that is going to benefit by him doing these things. The federal bureaucracy, the immigration agents, the Border Patrol, and bureaucrats like the FBI and the CIA and whatnot. That's going to really fire them up, and it'll mean a lot more jobs, and that's what it's about. I don't think it is about just a matter of public safety.
I think you are absolutely correct on everything you just said. And there's more, because Donald Trump has come to see himself and to be seen as a world leader. So it is now his viewpoint is very global. He just had this meeting with the Prime Minister of Britain. They're looking forward to working together to dominate the world, just like the old days. So he is working on two tracks, the domestic and the global. And it is about reinvigorating, to borrow your word, to reinvigorate white nationalism, white supremacy all over the world again. This is exactly where he's headed. But I think there may be a surprise waiting in the wings. Based on how things are developing, we should not miss a beat here. We should pay attention. Thanks so much for calling, David. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. Look, big things are happening, but we are also seeing some hopeful signs. And this is where I rejoice. I see hopeful signs that people are ready, getting ready. But we also have to figure out how we're going to get ready. And of course, when we're going to get ready. This is the point of reckoning we've been talking about for months. So maybe it's here, or it's soon will be here. Either way, it's a good sign. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow.